I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about kids and how they eat. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Chris Prasperi is here, chef at Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Faith.
So, as you know, we're going to be talking about why kids make the choices they make. We have a 14-year-old here, Maria Mack. I know her. And we're going to talk about why she likes and doesn't like certain things. But Chris, you and I have talked about this for a long time, that we are watching our friends' kids. You're a foster dad now, yeah. So you see this, you've seen this with your own foster child, where they go in and out of liking certain things, disliking things, and it seems like it's overnight.
And it is overnight, and their tastes are not like ours, right? Sometimes. I mean, as you get to be an adult and you get older, your tastes, I guess everyone says this, right? Your tastes change. But what does that mean? What does that your taste change actually mean? So when you're cooking for your children, do you have to keep that in your mind, right? Because what you're tasting might not be what he or she is tasting.
Yeah, and we get into this whole issue of is somebody defying somebody else. And so I think we're asking on this show, is that all that's going on here? Is this about some kind of control thing, or is this really biology? We've got a food scientist coming your way who's got some fascinating information. So let me give you a couple of examples. The 7-year-old twins that I'm friends with, Maddie and Gabe, they have these clear food preferences, and so I get to watch them. And it seemed like overnight they said they were eating fish, and then all of a sudden, within 24 hours, they were adamant that they didn't like fish. That was absolutely no way they were going to eat fish. And then the next minute, they're completely fine about fish, and now they eat fish. I have two parents I know, and they took their children to New York City, Chris, and they brought them to this – the kids love pizza. They brought them to this wonderful pizzeria, quite, you know, pretty expensive. And they order the pizza that the way the kids love it. It comes to the table. The kids take one eye. They just stared at it and said no. Both of them shook their heads no.
Wow.
We don't want it. We're not touching it. So the parents ate as quickly as they could. They leave the restaurant in New York City on their so-called tour of the city. And two blocks away, there's one of these joints by the slice. The kids spot it, and they said, we want that. And they went in and bought them each a slice of pizza, and they gobbled it down.
So is that – so there's the question. Is that psychology or is that taste?
Well, I thought – I asked the parents who are child psychologists,
okay,
by the
that's
way.
That's even better.
I said, what do you think is going on with these kids? And they said, we think that they didn't like the way it looked, and maybe they didn't like the way it smelled. But probably most of all, it wasn't the same as the one they know. Now, we've got a food scientist who might add some other choices on this list.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot. I hear, oh, it doesn't look the same, or it doesn't taste the same, or it's not what I'm used to eating. And I think that has a lot to do with it, too. So here's the question. Do your kids get used to a certain flavor profile or even the certain way a dish looks? And if you change that, that may disrupt, or even change the way it smells, that may disrupt their whole process of eating.
So what's going on is what we're talking about. Where did these preferences that kids develop come from? Is it psychological or biological? Why the love of sugar? Is it really that sugar is addictive, or is something else going on? So we're going to talk with the food scientist, as promised, with Claudine Pepin, who has written a children's cookbook on cooking French. But we're going to start this by going to the source, as we call it. Producer Lori Mack's daughter, Maria, grew up in our studios practically. And so we invited Maria, who's now 14, we can't believe this, to tell us how she thinks and feels about food. So welcome to the show, Maria. Welcome back, I should say, because you've been on before.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So what would you say is your favorite food for dinner?
I would say I tend to go towards lots of carbs, so I like to have pasta. I can never really get tired of pasta.
Okay. And then is there a meat, you know, a protein that you like the best where you could have it again and again? You know, like chicken, steak,
I think
lamb chops.
I think chicken. I'd have to aim towards chicken.
Chicken, but you sound more interested in pizza. Okay. So, Now, if you don't like a particular food that's being served, do you have a fallback position where you say, you know what, thanks for this, but I'm going to go and just do what? What would you go and get as your substitute that's easy to get?
That's a good question. I think it depends on where I am.
Home. Pretend you're
home. If I'm at home, if there's junk food in the house, that's what
potato
I tend
chips.
To go towards.
And okay. And cereal.
Cereal. Or if I have maybe in that time, if I have a yogurt in the fridge that I'd like to go to, and maybe she can come up with something else to make me if she...
Okay.
She wants.
So what would you say is how you judge whether you like something or not? What is happening to you if you say, no thanks? Is it the visual? Is it the smell? I don't even know if you know the answers, but is it that you try one bite and say, mm-mm? What is the thing that says to you first, this isn't going to work for me?
I'd say that it would be the smell, because when I see the way something looks, I don't let that turn me off of it until I've tried it. But if I can smell, sometimes there are certain smells where you can almost taste the smell and it doesn't give you a very pleasant taste. Mm.
I made her mac and cheese once and I tried to sneak smoked Swiss in it. And I tasted it and I was like, it gave a background note. And I'm saying all these things in my head going, this is really good. And she walked into the kitchen and she knew it was in there. Like, I didn't smell it. Mm. And she knew that was a note or a taste that she didn't want.
So, do you have the philosophy, or were you raised with the philosophy of, I will try every new food once, you know, I will try a bite of it to see what it's like, or are you allowed to, I mean, this is different in every house. Are you allowed to say, no thanks right off the bat, just based on smell, let's say, or the way something looks?
In the beginning, it started off with, try this. Don't just say no thank you, just, you know, because you don't know what you don't like. But then as I got older, and I got a sense of what I did and didn't like from the smells, I was allowed that no thank you if I really didn't want.
And as a little kid, do you remember what you didn't like and did like? I mean, did you go through stages where kids seem to like white food, I call it, you know, potatoes, macaroni,
yeah,
bread, white bread, crackers. Did you go through that stage where that's what you mostly wanted?
I think I did, definitely, yeah.
And now if you were the cook, if you had become the cook, and you could make whatever you wanted in the house. You know, we gave you a bunch of money and said, we'll take you to the supermarket. You can buy whatever you want. And we'll help you if you need some help. But you can cook and have whatever you want. What would it be?
I'd go for the simple things. As in, I'd make what you can get at a fast food restaurant. Not necessarily junky fast food, but I mean,
like what?
Pizza, pasta. That's what I would definitely go for. But maybe all different kinds of I'd take all different kinds of recipes for one dish of pasta, you know.
Okay. That's good. Thank you, Maria. Stay there, because we might have more stuff for you. So Maria Mack's mom is our show senior producer, Lori Mack. And Lori, we're watching Maria at this age at 14 trying to understand her own food preferences and try and figure that out. Because I don't know exactly when we all do this. Or how, I can't tell you what date I started to figure these things out. I just knew what I liked and knew what I didn't like. Can you identify with that? Or can you identify with where she's coming from?
I can hardly remember myself when this all changed for me, but I still feel like there are things that I'm still discovering that I actually really do like, that there was some point in my life that I can't exactly remember when, but that I didn't prefer at that time.
So where are you coming from now as Maria's mom? What are you thinking about from your side of the equation?
So, you know, it's difficult to try and plan. I every weekend try to go to the grocery store and I try to plan. And one of the questions I have for Maria every weekend is, what do you think you might like for dinner and what do you think you might like for breakfast during the week so that I can buy the things to prepare? And she really doesn't know, which makes my job really difficult too. And I don't think it's all her fault. I think, unfortunately for her, my cooking repertoire is not very lengthy. I have got a few dishes that just keep getting rotated around.
Sure. Like everybody else.
Well, and I don't love to cook, and I think that's because of my lack of knowledge of cooking. So,
well, also you're busy, Lori.
Sure, but I don't think I'm any more busy than anybody else is.
Well, I mean everybody feels the way you do, I think. So I'm saying don't beat yourself up about that. Everybody's the same.
It's a challenge of modern life, isn't it? The balance between having enough time to cook, balancing between what your kids eat, what your spouse eats, what you want. I mean, it really is tricky. But, I mean, I think the planning stage is where you got to start, right? That getting your kids' taste in there.
So we're going to talk next with a food scientist. But Chris, that's a great point. Maria, you hear your mom talking about how she's trying to plan. She doesn't want to waste food. Not that you do either. But she's trying to guess what it is that you will like the most. And I'm sure you're worried, Lori, about nutrition and the vitamins and minerals and all that kind of stuff too. So she wants, she's trying to get you to have a well-rounded meal and all that. I bet you can identify with her, your mom's issue, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But for you, is it hard to know at this stage, at 14, can you plan ahead? I mean, there must be a reason you can't, you're saying, I don't know. What is that about?
Well, here's what I've had this discussion with my mom a few times because she likes to say, you're kind of a picky eater. The thing is, though, if she finds something that I really like, she'll do this thing where she'll like to make it over and over again, which eventually, if I really like it, I'll keep eating it, but that will only last so long to a point where I can no longer eat that. And it kind of, sometimes in some rare cases where she's given me something, I've ever since that time she had given it to me so many times, I've never wanted it again.
So Lori finally gets a dish down right.
That's it.
Maria's
That's
loving
exactly
it. And Maria's eating it. And Lori is getting better at it every time. And then the next Thursday comes and you shut down and like, I don't want that anymore.
And I am so sorry to say that unfortunately for Maria, looking back at her childhood, her fondest memories will not be cooking in the kitchen with her mother.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You never know.
I don't know. I bet there's some good desserts coming your way, Maria. So, okay. But is it hard for you to know what you like? Do you know what I mean? I mean, if your mom says to you, what do you want next week, during the week? I don't know really yet what I like consistently, or is it, I don't know how I'm going to feel next week?
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know what I'm going to be in the mood for that week. So if she gives me, say, make this grocery list and tell me the things you want. That's easy if they're simple things, just like yogurt and stuff, that snacks. But when it comes to dinner, I can't possibly know what I'm going to be in the mood for that time. I could say right now I'm so in the mood for this kind of, we should do a home Chinese food dinner, something like that. I'd like to try something like that. But then when it comes to that day, I might say, I had that at school actually, or something like that, and I'm not in the mood for this. Hmm. Which makes it really hard for her, and I apologize.
Well, what were the rules when you were growing up? You must eat what's put in front of you, or were you allowed to opt out?
Before I just looked at it and said, I do not want this, I had to at least take a few bites because you can't send your child off to bed or anywhere without getting a bit of food in your stomach. But I think that if I really didn't like it, I could say, I want something else, please.
Yeah. And so, Lori, it was that a conscious choice on your part with Maria that you didn't want to have constant food wars?
It was. And I grew up being one of those kids who had to eat everything on my plate. Mm-hmm. And I really did. That didn't do me any favors. And I didn't want to instill that or keep that tradition going. I thought if she at least tried it, then she could give me an honest opinion of the food. And if she really didn't like it, then we'd have to figure out something else, or she'd have to just be hungry.
As you are listening to this conversation, I'm asking you, can you identify with this? I am with Chris Brosberry, a chef in Connecticut, and my buddy on the Food Schmooze. And we decided to do a show on how kids make the choices they do about food. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk to a food scientist. You might be very surprised by her findings. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton with Chris Brosberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, and we're on The Daily Show talking about this thing that happens in households all over the place, and that is this issue of how young people, how kids like to eat versus how adults like to eat and how that negotiation goes. And Chris, people like Chris have to design restaurant menus that are going to universally appeal to lots of kids. And it turns out, Chris, let's talk about the science of this. We talked with, we have read the research of Julie Minella of the Monell Chemical Senses Center. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to get her on the line. We're having some technical issues. So we've read all of her studies, and we've got these posted on our show, WNPR.org, The Faith Middleton Show. If you want to read these studies, you and your kids might be really interested in this. Let's do her chief findings, Chris.
Yeah, and Monell is they're the taste people. So, I mean,
this is a nonprofit.
Yeah, and whenever you have a taste question, they're usually the people you go to, or a smell, right? They study that in depth. And they find different interesting things about, like, the way we taste as adults sweet and the way kids taste sweet, right? And what that means and what is it about sugar that they crave that maybe we don't crave as much.
And so she is saying that that kids are living in different sensory worlds from adults when it comes to these basic tastes. And so the first thing to know is that they have discovered that children have a million more taste buds than grown-ups do. And that once you turn to be around Maria Mack's age, a young adolescent, your taste buds are lessening through time. And you'll see Maria's taste buds starting to change. And that will continue for the rest of her life and for us too, Chris.
Yeah, so, as we get older.
Yeah, so we're constantly renewing but losing taste buds. So kids have a zillion of them, it turns out. So they really taste things when they're young. So this might explain why.
Yeah, and I have a good example of that. I remember the first time I tasted coffee. Do you remember as a kid you tasted coffee for the first time? And it was the most vile thing I had ever tasted. And I looked at my parents and I could not understand why they would drink this stuff. And as you get older, so here's the thing. As you get older, your tastes kind of change. And then all of a sudden you start drinking coffee. And I noticed when I started drinking coffee, I put a lot of sugar in it. So it was cream, sugar, lots of sugar. And then as I got older, I lessened the sugar. And then I enjoy that bitterness that as a child I thought was like, why did they drink this? It's so horrible. So there's a good example of just one of them, bitter.
So it turns out that kids prefer intense sweetness and saltiness more than adults do. And I'm paraphrasing, but Julie Minella of the Monell Chemical Senses Center says that this is not so much psychological. And we don't want to, well, there could be psychology and control issues going on, but basically this is biology. That kids have the super taste buds, lots and lots of them, and so they taste more powerfully than we do, and so things taste really big to them. So they say things are too salty. They can say, I need sugar, I want sugar. And so she and her team started looking at, like, why aren't all kids do this with sugar? Because some don't, but a lot of kids do. And they said, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, Chris, but they said that the kids who were tall, like you, Maria, the tall kids had a lot of desire for sugar. Yeah. Their preferences were for sugar, and they said that the biologically, the kids' bodies genetically are saying to them, eat sugar because you're in the midst of a growth spurt. And so that is explaining, according to them, why there are some kids who are sugar on the brain. So literally.
And but it makes sense, right? Because here we are. I mean, I'm in my 40s. Growth has stopped. You know, you start – really. I mean,
except for horizontal.
Yeah, except for – yeah, but growth has stopped. So I guess that's the thing. So my body might be craving things less than Maria. Maria's in a growth part of her life. Right? Yeah, no kidding.
I'm still an adolescent.
But she's at that point now where her body is looking for different things than my body might be looking for, right? Because I'm just sort of maintaining. She's going through this growth spurt. So different foods do different things for your body. So that has a lot to do with our cravings, I think, right? Because your body craves what it needs.
Well, this is also, it turns out, a very sensitive word for professionals who do what Julie Minnelli does at these chemical sensing type research places. Especially in her work, they don't like us to use words like crave, addicted to, they said, because these are biological needs that are in some children for real biological reasons. And that, you know, we hope you will use words like preferences and desires as opposed to words that have a kind of negative spin on them for these kids. So what else did they say? So they're very sensitive to sweets and salty. And
really against bitter. Right?
Don't like bitter.
Yeah, and Maria, when we do a tossed salad, there's a green in there called frisée, and she picks it out. And I noticed it because at the end of the salad, there's a big pile of this squiggly stuff on her plate.
So you really do you taste that strongly, Maria?
Well, that's more of a texture issue for me because it has these, I've described them as odd edges that you feel on your tongue or the inside of your mouth that just turns me away from it. It's not, if it didn't have that, I feel like if I had dressed it with something sweeter, I could totally ignore it. But because of those edges, that texture, just I can't eat it.
See, so it's a textural. So I mean, there's so much, and I think that's why parents might have such a hard time. There are so many things at play here.
So here's an issue about what you do, because a lot of parents, we have homes where there are two parents. We've got often both parents are working. When we've got single parent families, a lot of pressure on the one parent trying to get all kinds of things done. So there's a lot of busyness all around the place. Jobs are getting harder and harder all the time in the workplace. So parents are exhausted by the time they come home. Kids are kind of stressed out from school. And these battles can begin, or there's a lot of confusion. And so professionals are encouraging more conversation about this. For instance, they're encouraging kids to look at these studies, Maria, that we have online. So I hope you will, too, because you and your mom, Maria, Lori, have begun having more conversations. And so they're saying, look at this study because you might be able to have a really good dialogue about what our findings are.
And she had a good point, too, about kids really getting more involved and even doing cookbooks. Right, Maria? Like if you had kids really Maria's point about kids doing cookbooks. Right, Maria?
Well, I thought that if you're not necessarily, I'd say maybe you're not a good cook, then getting involved in being able to cook with your parents and seeing what goes into it, there's a certain pride in that where, okay, I know what's gone into this, I helped with this, I'm going to eat this because I worked on it and I worked hard. So, and then you try it, and I don't know if it's even psychological or really is good, but you're saying, yeah, this is pretty good, I made this. I just think that always gets... Getting kids involved is great. And then to have maybe some kids who are really into cooking. I know some kids who are very passionate about it at my age. If they got together or one kid just made a cookbook, kids know best about what kids like to eat.
Yeah. You think?
I do, definitely.
But you know how hard it is for you to come up with certain, you know, things that you like. If I ask you, you're really kind of puzzling over that. But yeah. you also, it sounds like two things that are opposite at the same time. But you also think, let us decide because we know best. But what are we supposed to do? Because we're worried about that you'll get enough nutrients and minerals and vitamins that helps because your bones are growing right now. Yeah. You know, we're worried about making you healthy. So I wonder what we should do. How should we work this out, do you think?
Yeah, a combination between the two, right? Work with your mom. Your mom's going to be there saying, you need to have this, this, and this. And you're like, but I don't like that. I like this, this, and this.
Yeah,
and
you sort of. Because nobody wants to eat food you don't like. That's a horrible thing. Yeah. I mean, it really is terrible.
There was a plan. I now that I think about it, we should stick with it, actually. If I had time, I'd sit down with my mom and look at a cookbook and we just look through the recipes and see what sounded good to both of us. You know, okay, this sounds really good. And for my mom, well, maybe it's a little too many carbs in 1 week, you know. So pick something more healthy. And so I'd look through the book, and then I'd find something that just it really caught my attention. And we'd go, and I'd help cook that if I had time. And that just it was really good to me.
Yeah. Maria, that is the perfect setup for what we're going to do now. This idea of parents and children cooking together. And so we're going to use as our jumping off point, as Chris knows, this new cookbook that has come out. It's called Kids Cook French. And it's written in both English and French. And it is done by Claudine Pepin. And the illustrations in the book were created by her father, Jacques Pepin. The chef, and he's a very busy man, and he carved out time to do this. He's very currently wildly busy, as a matter of fact. And so is Claudine now that she's on the road and touring for this book. And so we said, can you stop and get on the line? And she has moved to Rhode Island, so she's fairly close by. Claudine, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Faith. What a pleasure and an honor it is to be here.
Oh, same here. I'm glad you did this book. I have a niece and a nephew and cannot wait to give this to them because their father speaks French and he loves to cook French, and this is going to be ideal for them. So tell me what you had in mind with this. What made you do this?
Well, this was a project that was actually proposed to me. But in doing it, I wanted to make it so that it was real and it was honest and it was viable, because these aren't, I mean, if you've looked at the book at all, these are not necessarily kid recipes. Mm-hmm. They're not something that a 3-year-old is going to make. It's real food. It's food that should take you through not just your childhood years, but hopefully become a little bit of a part of who you are and shape your taste buds so that you can not be a culinarian, but at least know what a decent chicken tastes like. And I really wanted to have something that was real and that was honest. And all of these recipes are things that we make at home.
Yeah, so I did read every word of your book and dove into the recipes, and I was excited to make a couple of these things myself. So we're talking about these little cheese puffs that are called gougères, and we are talking about these deviled eggs, eggs Jeannette, and cauliflower souffle, which is it sounds like something that would be challenging for kids, Vichy Soise, we have lamb chops with lemon zest and herbs of Provence, and on it goes. So you see what we're talking about here. This is something that kids and grown-ups can do together. But Claudine, we had a taste scientist as our reference on the show earlier, and I want to quote you from the book. You say that, no, this is good. You say that you believe that kids will eat what you put in front of them. Children don't come into the world eating only chicken nuggets, pizza, and French fries. They will eat the food that they are given. That's the food they will become used to and like. And you say that at the beginning of the book. So
yeah.
Now, I understand in some families that that's the philosophy in the kitchen and at the table. other families do it a different way. So our taste scientists really kind of blew our minds because they had these control groups and they've been studying these kids, and they find out that there is a genetic component to this. Kids in growth spurts, with growth spurts, are, and the tall kids are having lots of growth spurts, so they are loving sugar. And other kids who are short, not so much. And that they have so many more taste buds at that age than we do. They taste food entirely differently.
Huh.
And they have these preferences where they don't like salt. They might like sugar. They don't like bitter. But this is not a control issue. It's a biological issue. But I have to say, based on what you say, I kind of see two things at once. Chris, what do you think? And then I want to get Claudine's take on it.
I think there's definitely, if you do it right, that you can do it the way Claudine's doing it and satisfy your kids too. But it's having that open conversation with them. And really, I think they said it great. And I even slipped up and said craving. Listening to what your kids are in need of, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a question for Claudine. I mean, how does it go with your daughter, Claudine?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Shori in just one second. Claudine, stay where you are for just a moment. We're going to We're going to do a quick break and then come back and talk to Claudine Pepin about her new book, Kids Cook French. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton with Chris Brotsberry here on the show as we look at why kids eat the way they do. Why do they have such strong opinions about what they will and will not eat? It seems to be a moving target. And we're looking at whether it's psychological, you know, meaning about autonomy and control. And who knows, maybe part of it is that. But is it also biological? We've got the research on the show of from the Chemical Sense Center, the Minnell Chemical Sense Center, and Julie Minella's work says that it is absolutely biological, that kids crave sugar for a reason. They have issues about salt and bitter for a reason. It's in their genes. It has to do with growth spurts and all their millions of taste buds, more than we have, kind of a thing. So Claudine Pepin is with us because she wrote Kids Cook French. It's both in French and English. Her father, Jacques Pepin, did the illustrations for the book. And
my daughter.
And your daughter, Shori, which is what we're getting to right now. So tell us about... you would just put food in front of Shori and she would just eat it because that's what you did?
Well, yes and no. I mean, she definitely has taste that she doesn't like. She's never liked sweet potatoes, which I find fascinating. I didn't grow up eating sweet potatoes. It wasn't something that we had very often at home. But I know that it's very nutritious. It's a bit sweet, so kids tend to like it. But she has never really liked sweet potatoes. She can't abide asparagus, the poor thing. She shudders. And I've seen her eat it. I've seen her eat it, to be polite, because she has to. But she'll sit there and she'll shudder. She also doesn't like tripe and head cheese, but I can you know, understand.
Forgive her for that.
Like really all the other children.
Well, no, French kids eat head cheese and tripe.
No, I know. I'm laughing. How many people listening now say, I know, I have the same issue with the head cheese in my house. So,
I mean, what I always did was when she would say, I want ice cream, I would sort of kind of back up and say, would you like some milk? Oh, yes. So I would sort of back up and say, what if she was asking me for junk food, I would back up and try and figure out, what does that little body need that's growing at a mile an hour? Yeah. You know, I mean, they grow so fast. Uh-huh. So I just sort of took it upon myself, and I don't have any kind of biological study or degree to support it, but I know that your body craves what it needs.
Yeah. Now how do you feel like you got around the battles that seem
there are no battles?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's a monarchy.
Now Maria's shuddering.
Yeah.
No, it's not. The way we do it, I obviously am not going to make her eat asparagus because she really can't abide it. But when we have dinner, the vegetable is a must. You have to eat the vegetables. The meat is a sum, and the rest is negotiable.
Interesting. So,
that is good. And that works.
It works. It works great. It works just fine. I mean, my parents don't like it. Well, my father doesn't like it. My mother's much more forgiving on that sense. But because he's very much part of the clean plate club.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, because when he was growing up, there just wasn't a lot of food. You know, there were things like, a war.
Yeah.
So you didn't have very much food. So goodness, you always cleaned your plate out of respect for the people that gave you the food, out of respect for the fact that you knew people who didn't have as much to eat. But my thought process is that my beautiful little daughter is going to go to restaurants, and I want her to know when she's full.
Yeah.
Mm. Because restaurant portions are so enormous, you know, or you go to someone's house and they put so much food on your plate. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, she finishes her plate, but she knows she doesn't have to. She can leave one bite and it's fine.
You've reminded me that when I was growing up, there was a sentence that all the parents said. And my parents were from Scotland, and so I grew up with lots of Scotch food. And they would say, children in China are starving.
Right.
And so they were trying to do Ethiopian
yeah,
in your house.
Me, yeah.
They were trying to say that they were trying to talk to me about other people less fortunate than you would be happy to have anything on your plate right now. And so that it wasn't a winning argument with me. I mean, there were just certain things I didn't like, carrots that I hid in the kitchen table drawer.
Ooh,
discovered, you know, maybe once a year and not in the best condition. So tell me quickly, before you go, though, in Kids Cook French, why did you choose the recipes you chose? I think it's a wonderful package of recipes, going from the simple to things that are a little bit more complex, but foods that everyday homes would make, that grandmothers might have made. I really like that about these.
Well, they are very family-oriented recipes, and they're really very much a part of my family. And that's really why we chose them. We did do the lamb chops because I thought doing a whole roast of lamb would be a bit more intimidating. And I wanted this to be more of a quotidian kind of recipe book that you can go to a couple times a week if you choose to. And the vegetables, we chose vegetables that we really like. And my husband grows an abundance of Swiss chard in the garden. So if we didn't use Swiss chard as one of the recipes, we were just going to have way too much. So we had to use that. We always have vinaigrette in a mason jar. And if not, as is the case now, there's a shallot and a mason jar on the kitchen counter waiting. I'm waiting for my husband to cut it up.
I'm starving.
We always have that on the table.
He teaches at Johnson & Wales, I should say. So
yes.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Claudine, for being on the show. It is the perfect thing for us to talk about. I think you're getting at something important. Maria, just before you came on, said, you know, it would be really great when my mother and I cook together. It's much more fun, and I want to eat the food more because I'm involved. So I think you've really hit on something. Thank you. And I'm glad it's French.
Oh,
thank you.
It's my pleasure. And I also have to say that there are little boxes and things like suggestions. If you have time to wash something that you've used while you're cooking, do it. And all of those little things that hopefully make entertaining much more pleasurable and much more viable for people that aren't accustomed to it. And that all comes from my mother.
My mother
is the best entertainer ever.
She is always seamless.
And
I agree.
She's also my favorite lady. So
I know, me too. Thank you. Thank you so much, Claudine.
You're very
all
welcome.
Right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Author
bye-bye.
Of Kids Cook French. We want to open the phone lines. You know, what have the food wars been like in your house? How did you solve them? How do you struggle with them? 203-776-9677. Easy way to remember. 203-776-WNPR. Chris, as restaurants design kids' menus, there's always the same thing on these menus. The chicken nuggets,
yeah, chicken fingers,
french fries, a hot dog.
Yeah, yeah. Pasta with butter. Yeah.
So does it just go around? That's what...
Yeah, and I use them as my fallbacks. like for kids, we offer half portions of pretty much everything that's on the menu. So if you want to be adventurous, or we'll tailor the menu to the kid if that's what they want. But sometimes you really need those fallbacks, and those fallbacks are things that we know kids will eat, right? And we make our own chicken fingers, and we do a good pasta with real butter. But it's still – those are the things that we know work for a kid that is sitting there at the menu, maybe not sure what they want, or just at that point in their taste where they really just want the same things over and over again.
There are a lot of parents I don't know how many. I shouldn't say a lot. But there are parents who say, I don't want to have food be a war in our house. And so – some pediatricians will say to them, you know, with the kids grazing the way they do, even if there's a lot of junk food involved, eventually over the course of time, they're going to get enough vitamins and minerals and it's all going to be fine in this modern culture we're in, you know, provided we're not talking about extreme poverty here and a lack of any food on the table. So some people will avoid these food wars and others consider it a mark of honor and respect that a child stays at the table until either the plate is clean or the amount that the parent dictates must be eaten is eaten. Yeah. Others have the good fortune of, like Claudine and her daughter Shori, who eats much of what is put in front of her. Anne Marie, Faith Middleton with Chris Prosperi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith. I live on the east end of Long Island. I wanted to just tell you that I love your show.
Thank you.
And I am a family and consumer science teacher, which used to be called home economics.
Right.
Cool.
And my eighth graders cook for 5 weeks of their course. And they love it. They absolutely love it because they get into the kitchens. They get to do as much as they can. I oversee them, they work in groups, and they get to make choices for themselves. And that's what makes cooking fun. It gets them involved, and a lot of kids sometimes don't get to cook at home. So by teaching them the basics, they can then bring that with them home.
That's what Maria Mack, who's 14 and on our show today, just said. She agrees with you. She likes that being involved. It makes her want to eat the food more. Are you saying, though, that they're eating things they normally wouldn't eat at home? I mean, they're not just making macaroni and cheese and...
Oh, no. Well, we try. I mean, I'm adventurous, so I actually do a three-day knife skills lesson with them. So I teach them how to use knives. Yes, eighth graders. And we do fruit salad, crudité. I teach them how to sauté.
Nice.
And those sautéed vegetables go on pizza. So it's adding things to what they like and trying new fruits, trying new vegetables. I make them try something new.
That's awesome.
You know, being a parent, I do that, you know, to my students as well as my children.
Wow, and that works, Emery, that works?
They do.
With your kids, too? Fantastic.
Everyone tries, and that's the goal.
All right.
So
thank you.
It's a lot of fun. No problem.
Thank you. Where are you on the East End?
Well, I teach in East Hampton, and I live in Hampton Bays.
Oh, lucky. Both places. Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
It's a pleasure. See, Maria, so there you go. Would that appeal to you, that idea of chopping vegetables yourself, learning some knife skills? You choose some of the vegetables. Would you eat pizza that way?
Definitely. That sounds like a great idea. And if I may, we have something similar at my school as well. And it's because we have all these different kinds of clubs, and one that we have cooking club, which is our teacher doesn't teach us necessarily knife skills, which would definitely be
useful.
Cool. Definitely. But he also introduces us to something. So I wanted to sign up because food, who doesn't? I mean, I'd like to eat, and that's something that just appealed to me. So, but then when I got there, I hadn't known that this course was going to be on spicy food. And I'm not a big spicy food eater, but everything we've made so far, and I think what Anne-Marie and what the cookbook that we were talking about suggest is correct, that when kids are working, it just – in the making of the food, it just makes it more appealing.
So you eat the spicy food in the class.
Yeah, it's delicious. Empanadas, I never thought that's...
You would like an empanada.
Yeah, and very it was amazing.
Cool. Wow, isn't that great? Okay,
awesome.
Who have we got? And Chris, you've got a quick story. Yeah. Chris just made us... Linda Juca is the food columnist with Chris online at the Hartford Courant. And she has this go-to dish that she still makes for her grown-up kids.
And we should put it online because...
And we just ate this dish, and it was so delicious.
And
it's crazy.
It's got Maria's stamp of approval.
It took 5 minutes.
It's called pastini.
Pastini. Okay, so we'll get to that in a second. Debbie, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith. I just want to tell you, I love your show, and I whenever I can.
That is so nice of you. Thank you.
Well, I laughed out loud when I heard the stories of how Lori Mack makes the food until no one else wants to eat it, and that's exactly what happens in my house. I could really empathize with that because I do the very same thing. I don't have a great repertoire of recipes. I am learning to like to cook, but my daughter and son and I eat very different things. I like quite simple foods, and they like all the saucy, cheesy things that I would never eat. So I usually end up making two meals. So it's interesting to hear what the food scientist said about the different palates that kids have.
Well,
I never knew that.
This is interesting because tonight Chris at his restaurant Metro Beast has a chef who focuses on being flexitarians, where these recipes are all about how to cook for multiple tastes at the table. What everybody is describing on this show is that, you know, maybe you would make something with a few common ingredients that everybody can eat, and then there's a bowl of cheese for the ones who like cheese to put on top.
And a protein of some kind.
And the protein you can add.
That would go
and
with the veggies.
Chris, this is perfect timing for your
perfect
event tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Debbie. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks to our producers, by the way, Jonathan McNichol and Lori Mack. And also, Lori, thanks for being on the show in this way. And Maria Mack, really appreciate you being here, although feel free to chime in. What did you make? Linda Juca's pastine.
Yeah, and it was a dish that she came up for her kids when they were being difficult. And
picky.
She didn't want, picky, and she didn't want to have to, like, you know, make two different things. And this was just real simple, some orzo pasta. You cook that, you drain it, put it back in the pan with a little bit of the water. You melt some butter in there, add 4 slices of American cheese. You get that nice and melted and then take it off the stove and crack an egg in there and toss it, sort of mix it in. The egg cooks from the warm pasta. And you dump it in bowls with a sprinkling of Parmesan on top. And
now
it's like the simplest thing in the world.
Now, Maria, you said food words can really freak you out. So if you heard someone describing that you take a pot off the stove and crack an egg into it and then just stir it up and it's magically cooked, would you get, you know, without having just eaten this, which, and you loved, you ate 2 bowls of it, so I know you loved it, but would that freak you out, the sound of that? Because it was cooked completely and delicious, but you know what I mean? Is it this description? Do words have an effect?
I definitely think that words have an effect, as in, if I heard that someone was cracking an egg, I had watched him do it, and at first I was suspicious as to how that would work, but I was curious to try it. But I think when you're asking, do words tend to turn people off of eating something? I definitely think if you're at a foreign restaurant or something, and you see these words that you can't pronounce, and that
That's good. That's very good information.
Or if we told her that egg I cracked and put in there was a duck egg.
I know. It was.
And it was a duck egg.
So you can add that to your
bird
sighting list.
See, we sort of snuck that in on you, too, that you actually had a duck egg.
Thank you, Maria Mack and Chris Brassberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. As always, this show is about the richness of life. I could do this show for weeks. Find the books, people, great recipes, and value wines we feature right now, plus those articles from the Taste Scientists. Read them with your kids. It's at the Faith Middleton Show, WNPR.org. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.